I have a special guest actually calling from afar. Jan Miles is one of the captains of the Pride of Baltimore, which is one of the larger ships that will be at the Festival of Sail in Two Harbors a week from now. And Jan, thank you so much for being with us on the air here at KTWH. It's a pleasure to have you.
Well, good morning. Yes, and thank you for asking Pride of Baltimore to participate in your show.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it would be really nice to have people have sort of a background sense. This is obviously our first time hosting something like this, although many of the citizens of Two Harbors have been to the Festival of Sail in Duluth, and some know about tall ships. And I'll also tell you that my husband is a captain, and we have sailed all over the Great Lakes and the Atlantic as well. So we have a lot of interest in water and in sailing in general around here. And I'm just really excited to see the sort of historical piece of the clipper ships coming in. And do you want to just give us a little history of the Pride of Baltimore? What are its measurements, and how long you've been on it? What was the original purpose of its existence? You know, all that kind of stuff would be great.
Sure, happy to. And let me say that the most enthusiastic region for what happens on the water, in my experience, one of the most enthusiastic regions is the Great Lakes. I've been sailing into the Great Lakes since 1981. And I've been from the Atlantic into the lakes and back out to the Atlantic probably 15 or 18 different times aboard three different vessels. And the enthusiasm that the Great Lakes population has for any kind of vessel. I mean, they're wonderfully supportive of their own lake boats, but they are also just as enthusiastic for the saltwater boat. So it's always a welcoming experience to have Pride of Baltimore 2 visiting Great Lakes ports. And we're not so often in Lake Superior. We've done it four times, I think, with this vessel. 89 was the first time. There was no festival. We were representing the state of Maryland. Been to Duluth three additional times with festivals. This is the first time, as you pointed out, to be in Two Harbors. And the Pride of Baltimore is a pretty faithful representation of the stunning vessels that come out of Baltimore, were developed over a long period of time from the late 1600s through the early 1800s, came to fame because of the 1812 war. So this is the Atlantic iteration of the 1812 war successes, one of the number of successes. Of course, there is that other success out at Western Lake Erie with the Brig Niagara.
Yes.
So what is Pride of Baltimore? She is 157 feet sparred length. That's the including the overhang of the head rig and the boom off the stern. Her hull length on deck is, the rail cap is 100 feet. She's got a 91-foot waterline length. She's 26 feet of beam, and she draws 12.5 feet of water. Her air draft is 107 feet, and she's a schooner rig with the augmentation of some square, so she's it's fair to say she's a hermaphrodite, but she's a square topsail schooner, as against a topmast schooner, which can have two sections per mast, but without the square. We have both the two sections per mast plus the squares. And so square topsail schooner, quite weatherly for her day, maybe not quite so weatherly for the modern boats of today. And I'll say that today the modern vessel is hardly in the water at all. The weight of material is so light for their length. They're very lightweight, and so they float on top of the water much like a canoe does, and then they put these fins down low to create the stability, and they're just blades. They're just knife blades.
Yes.
And so there's hardly anything to drag through the water. In the case of Pride of Baltimore II, her molded beam of 26 carries down below the water at least a foot and a half before it starts to curve to go down to the center spine of the boat, the backbone of the boat, way down low at 10 to 12 feet, being that keel. But in those days, what was somewhat unique is the amount of angle that that long log keel has, so that it's very shallow up front compared to back aft, 12 and a half feet back aft, and maybe 8 feet up forward. And that's called drag. That angle of the keel is called drag in nomenclature of naval architecture. And then it's not as long as the boat is, because the stem is raked well forward, the stern post is raked well aft. And so the result is that below the waterline, the boat is a lot smaller than it appears when it's above the waterline. So this is one attribute of a relatively sharp-built schooner hull that was good for safety at sea when you were worried about privateers of another country or worried about piracy. Now, there were other attributes. There's a thing called dead rise. So when you look at a cargo boat that you see in the lakes today, whether it's a saltwater boat or a laker, the beam of the boat goes all the way down to the keel. So if it's drawing 30 feet of water, the bilges of a cargo boat are almost the same depth.
Right.
At the beam, full beam width. Well, that's a sort of a boxy shape that works very well for cargo carrying, but is not very good necessarily for sailing fast. And so smaller boats might have a much shallower bilge. So this dead rise is that angle where the bilge is way up high, and a high dead rise boat versus a cargo boat with a very, very low dead rise is a way of conversing about hull shape. So combination of a short keel with a lot of drag, short because of the angled stem and stern post, and then the very, very high dead rise means the underwater hull shape is good for sliding through the water, is good for turning very quickly for the hull length above the water. And these attributes played with the sail area to be highly maneuverable, able to run away from larger naval vessels, but at the same time be able to catch up with cargo vessels on the sea and be practicing the art of privateering. And in the 1812 war, there was a fair amount of risk-taking by civilians capturing English cargo vessels and running keeping away from the Navy. So Pride of Baltimore II is a Baltimore schooner built in Fells Point. The type was built in Fells Point, which is a neighborhood of Baltimore. And they were the most successful privateers. Of all the American-built or converted fast boats, Baltimore boats were by far the most successful at privateering. It caused the English to come into Baltimore and try to burn the shipyards. Yeah, that failure right after the burning of Washington resulted in the poetry that is now our national anthem, the Star Spangled Banner. And today, the Pride of Baltimore II is an ambassador for the state of Maryland, an ambassador for the story of Star Spangled Banner, is a modern friend maker for Baltimore and Maryland, and is a popular vessel for these tall ship festivals because she's just a stunning thing to look at.
Yeah,
and she sails pretty well.
Yeah. I was going to say she is definitely a stunning thing to look at, and I'm excited for the people that get to go out on her. Is there, I assume that there is a crew aboard. I know you're a captain. How many people can work this ship? I mean, and how, like, I know that, you know, things like winches, you know, that used to take many people. Do you have all the old-fashioned gear on there, or is there some newfangled modern equipment as well?
Well, being a representation of our history, but being in a modern era, the vessel is certified by the United States Coast Guard as a passenger-carrying vessel, and we are able to take people for a short sail. we don't do much of that when we're in transit. We can carry as many as six people when we're in transit between ports, and they're acting as a delivery crew, an augmentation to the crew as if they're delivery crew, and they pay for that privilege. We man the vessel with 12 people seasonally. So there's the full-time captain trading out with the other captain, and then there's 11 seasonal persons of various skill sets. So, you know, we have three watch leaders, a couple of mates, and a bosun. They serve as watch leaders when we're sailing overnight. And then we have a full-time cook. I have seven deckhands, of which one deckhand acts as an engineer. So we're always 12 on board when we're crewed up and operating. And that provides the time off that is needed for when you're sailing overnight. We're using a four-hour watch system. So it's 4 hours on for one-third of the crew, and then it's 4 hours off having been on watch. And then it's 4 hours being in a standby status, but you can be asleep for that status, and you're just adding some manpower, crew power, to whatever has to be done between watch change, and we try to do sail handling at the watch change most often. When we're in port, that means we can divide the crew up into two groups or into three groups if we have 3 days of a festival and give some time off while we operate with at least six people on deck and five or six people on deck and or more during the festivals to answer questions of the crowd. So these folks are all paid. You can't keep a tight schedule without being paying the crew. It's a liveaboard situation. They come from all over the country. There is quite a community of traditional sailors. If anybody's interested in reading up a little bit about that, there's the Tall Ships America organization. Check them out. The a lot of member vessels, and most of our traditional vessels dabble in education of varied degrees,
right,
as well as sharing with the general public. There's quite a few of them in the lakes, actually. Captain, go ahead.
I was just going to ask, are you a year-round operation that heads down to the Caribbean in the winter, or do you take time off from Baltimore?
Well, being the type of vessel that she is, constructed the way she is, like many of the traditional vessels in the United States, it's you never walk away from the vessel in the middle of winter and just say, we'll just come back with the key and put it in the ignition. It's maintenance, maintenance, maintenance,
yes,
and taking care of the ship and upgrade. So what happens is we'll reduce the crew size down to a maintenance group, unless we have a special project, in which case we might hire more people. But we stop living aboard the boat from around mid to early December till the end of January or early mid-February. And that gives us a chance to do some very focused onboard maintenance, down below maintenance. But otherwise, we're always maintaining. So we'll do a down rig in the fall and put the secondary spars on the ground so we can have direct access. So we take the sails off, we take the running rigging off, we store that, we inspect that, and we do more inspecting as we reassemble in the spring. So we're a month putting the boat to bed in the fall, and we're 6 weeks putting it together in the spring. And meanwhile, you have to schedule dry dock. So we do that annually. A wooden vessel requires a lot of focus on caulking to stay snug in terms of stiffness, but also watertight integrity. So there's a lot to do, and we're doing it all the time. But we don't sail south in the winter. She is capable of doing that. We've gone year-round a number of times over the years, but the mission just doesn't call for it very often.
Yeah,
we went to China and other nations in Eastern Asia back in 1998. So that required being year-round. So we went from 1997 in the fall, sailing all the way to Asia, and then came back and got home by the fall of 98, having done China, Taiwan, South Korea, and Japan, and then the Pacific Northwest from Vancouver and Seattle down. and return, and then laid up for the winter of 98-99. So, and did so, and we were maintaining all the time. So, yeah, there's no rest.
Yeah, wow. That, so you sailed all the way around the world that way with the trade winds.
No, that was an out and back, and I got there's a lot of comment among those who have gone around the world is, why did you keep on going? You're more than halfway by the time you got there. But in order to represent Maryland and keep Maryland aware of their sailing ambassador, the amount of time we spend away from home is a matter of judgment. And these adventures are story creators. And so, you know, over the 40 years of this Pride legacy, the first Pride of Baltimore started sailing in 1977. It's a matter of telling the story of what we intend to do, and remind everybody of what we're doing, and then celebrate the success of the story when we get back. So there's that need to salt and pepper the whole thing. And so today's world of communication with social media and what have you, it puts a demand on the ship for timeliness with updating the story. You know, captain's logs, visual information whenever within reach of technology. So cellular technology, we're not in a position to do a lot of media through satellite, but we can certainly email stories. We're always updating the story, and it's an adventure. As these tall ship festivals demonstrate their popularity, it's an alternate lifestyle. It's a lot of work.
Yes.
And sure, it looks like a lot of fun, but it's a lot of responsibility for safety. But it is an adventure, and so those of us who are career people, it takes a fair amount of study and developing experience. Licensure is involved for those of us like Captain Crosby and myself, and the mates and the watch leaders. When it comes to international voyaging, there are standards of training that are required and are checked on by the country that you're visiting. So that can be expensive because there's firefighting training, there's international law to be trained in, and so it's a career that's not for the faint of heart. It might look like fun, but it's a commitment, just like an airline pilot or a commercial transport pilot or these big ships in the lakes and elsewhere. Those skill sets are not lightly gained, and it requires being away from home. So it's a lifestyle choice factor. Look at the truckers that drive around the country. Those are doing diligent things and having licenses and keeping up with safety, and the family has to have an agreement about that. But we do get home. We're not at sea all the time. We have two captains that take turns, and seasonally the crew will jump from off the boat to another boat, sometimes come back to another boat, to a boat they've been on. So that itinerant lifestyle is very common in the marine world.
Yes. Yes. And I was going to just say exactly what you said, as I know it probably can look like you're just sailing off into a beautiful sunset. That's not really the choice, but clearly it is a choice you've made for a long time now. We're running out of time, but I want to quickly ask, like, just personally, like, what keeps you going on this? Obviously, you've been at this for a long time. Is it the adventure? Is it the people you meet? Is it just being on the water? Like, what is it that keeps you so tied to a lifestyle and a boat that, you know, fascinates but also intimidates 99% of the people in the world?
Well, you've more or less encapsulated all the elements that keep me involved. Sailing is an activity that involves the brain a great deal.
Yes.
Some boats create a situation where over a fairly quick period of time, it's less demanding on the brain because it's a relatively simple rig. But when you get a pretty complex rig, then that keeps the brain engaged because there are many ways to solve the problem. It's not always one way or very few ways to choose from. The other thing is that pride is a mission that is various. It's not the same every year. And it's very invigorating. It's international. Not very many American vessels do the kind of variety that Pride has. So and the weather is always a variety. The different ports, the different coastlines, the same way are even when you return, it's not your home waters, so you're returning. You have to remind yourself as to the demands. Going up the St. Lawrence Seaway and heading into the lakes is also a very demanding,
yes,
intellectually demanding situation because of the recurrence, reversing currents, the locks,
the Welland Canal,
and the narrow navigation it takes when you're on a tight schedule. You can't just stop anywhere you want to stop. So a lot of planning, a lot of logistics. So the sum total is that it's a very engaging process and not rote at all. And,
yes,
you know, day sail operations require discipline and diligence, but it can get to be kind of rote. So I would say that my engagement for the length of time I've been with Pride, going back as early as 1981, is that it's that variety. It's that privilege and that responsibility and that the range of authority that I've been able to enjoy. That's part of it. But the vessel is so rewarding and so demanding that it's satisfying when you resolve a situation more efficiently than maybe another time you were in the same situation. So she's quite the puzzle. She can be pretty frustrating. We had a pretty frustrating sail out to Bermuda this last June. It was easterly winds, and that boat weighs over 185 long tons, or over 415,000 pounds, and dragging that hull through the water to windward when there's a 8 to 10 foot sea, you just don't do it directly because all that head rig is sticking out over the front. So you don't want to plunge that into the water. So you have to sail wide. So sometimes going to windward is very frustrating and very. So with that, it can be. Keeping a schedule can be a problem, but
which is happening right now, isn't it? Because the Pride of Baltimore is trying to get here, and it is west, west, west.
Yes, it is, and will be for at least another 24 hours of fair, fresh strength. I mean, right now she's sailing between Sault Ste. Marie and the Keweenaw Peninsula, so that's a fairly windy. He's currently having fairly fresh winds of 15 to 20 knots, and so she's climbing her way to weather. And in fresh water, the sea stakes quite steep.
It is, and I know the troughs are narrow in the Great Lakes, and so they're not like rolling mountains; they're like kind of like walls in front of you.
Right. Right, and the boat's 185 tons is sitting in the water. It's not like the modern sailboats that we see, the ocean racers that we've seen, like the Volvo boats, where they're not as heavy, sure, but they're still pretty big. They're like 60, 70 feet long, but they're sitting on top of the water.
Yes.
And they have these fins that keep them from sliding sideways. So the weight of material, the shape of the boat, it's the fastest thing that ever existed back in the day, and it's still pretty good.
It's still
today.
Pretty good, I think. Yeah, it's a lot faster than our 40-foot sailboat, I'll say that.
Well, maybe in light air, or not in light air, but maybe in heavy air when it's reaching. But upwind, there's a point with which I think your 40-footer would go faster than Pride. It's a narrow range. But,
into the wind for sure will do better. But I don't know, going downwind, I've heard those ships like the Pride of Baltimore just fly down there, and you got the current with you. And yeah, when it's all to your advantage.
Sure.
It's
well, that's
great
that
sail.
Waterline length rule. That's that waterline length. You take the square root of your waterline length and multiply it by a correction factor, and it's between 1.3 and 1.5, and you come up with a number. Well, the boats that float on top of the water go faster than hull speed, planing kind of thing, that's a different story. So, yeah, there's a limit. Pod can be upwards of 14 knots. We've actually touched 15 a couple of times, but not sustained it. Our sustaining speed is probably 12 to 13 knots, and that's all when it's favorable.
Right.
But right now she's plunging along probably at 4.5 to 6 knots, depending upon the sea state.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Jan. We're out of time. Is there any final comment you'd like to make before we sign out here? It's really been fun talking to you.
Well, I'm certain that Captain Crosby's looking forward to his visit to Two Harbors. He is a Western Superior origin, grew up in the Duluth Superior area. So he's coming home right now.
Yeah.
So, and he's very familiar with that area. So he's looking forward to sailing Pride into his home waters.
That's exciting. Thank you so much, Jan, and good luck in all your voyaging future.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Nice to talk with you.
Yes. Yeah. You take care. That was Jan Miles, the captain of the Pride of Baltimore.